Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with your co-host Mark Holland, the Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant. Quite an education. Last few shows, the estate planning life cycle we've been going with Paul on, and this has been quite a journey, and Paul really learned a lot.
Good, I'm glad. Yeah. There is a specific life cycle that estate plans actually go through. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we get into the I have a document and so I got to be set mentality, yet that may not exactly work out for your estate's favor if we don't keep engaged in the process. Mm-hmm. And so let me take a quick moment and review these.
Okay.
For the life cycle.
And you
cycle.
Said normally each one of these sessions is several hours long.
Well, and that's specifically on the topic that we did last weekend,
right,
that we're going to stay on,
okay,
here for today, which is the settlement system.
Okay.
And so, yes, I have a 2.5-hour session for clients to bring their family in. And so we're trying to do this in just a couple quick hit shows.
Okay.
So there's a lot more to be uncovered, which is where we're going to stay today in the settlement system.
Okay.
But the first part of this life cycle of estate planning is we need to be educated and make sure that we understand what we need to do in estate planning so we can make the best decisions for our family. Once we discover that, we need to engage and create with a counselor, with somebody else who is going to have the experience and the understanding of what things to ask that we don't know to ask if we're trying to do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So in my opinion, do-it-yourself documents really are a trap. And so we need to be careful how we think we can do this,
like will.com
this by our state.
Or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Or whatever they are. I don't even know them, to be honest. So nonetheless, after education, we need to engage. Then we have the financial integration. That's number three. Financial integration is to ensure that all of our financial accounts blend with that new plan so that all of the assets are working in concert with each other. Then we enter into the continuation commitment. That is the process of staying involved in your estate plan, continually educated, knowing what legal or tax things have changed, when that's important for your plan to be adjusted, or when family issues arise to the level that they need to be implemented or that they require an implementation strategy in your plan. So this is not a one and done process. This is a stay involved commitment so that the plan will actually work. Then family reception. We've talked about that most viewpoints are, I'm going to transfer wealth. That is from the one of who holds the account information versus family reception, which is the ideology that my heirs need to be ready to receive what I'm going to pass. Most people inherit more money than what they've ever earned in their lifetime. And so specifically with the amount of wealth that's going to be transferred in the next generation, typically when it's being passed to my generation, my parents actually out-earned what my generation has, which is actually flipped than most other story scenarios, which is typically my parents did not inherit much from their family. But now they're about ready to leave more as a generation than what their parents earned.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a different dichotomy, a different thinking process we need to look at, which is the family ready to receive what they're going to, what we're going to leave behind? Life adjustments is the next step, which is life constantly changes. So we need to have a relationship with an estate planning attorney, with a firm that has a process ready for each step of this life journey that we're going to encounter. So that is kind of the review. And then we're into now the settlement system. And last show we reviewed very quickly that it's important that we make sure we get all the bills and we know exactly what's in the estate with values. And that's because we're going to have to give an account and because we owe a duty to both the beneficiaries and to creditors when we close an estate. not one or the other, but to both of those groups of people. And we need to make sure that everything that is received in the estate is being well tracked so that when we hand off the final whatever is left over to beneficiaries, they can see everything right down the list of exactly what they have.
It should be the creditors first then, wouldn't you say? Otherwise, you might get the scenario where an unexpected bill comes due and you've already passed out the money to the beneficiaries and you have to go get it back.
You have to go get it back. And and at the end of the show last week, we talked about that that's one of the bigger traps of using a will or beneficiary designations is that everything goes by operation of law around the probate process, and it really bankrupts the estate. And so in my philosophy, we don't want to bankrupt an estate. We need something there so that we can perform our fiduciary duties. And so just because the heir received it doesn't mean that the creditors now lose. It means that the beneficiary has to give back money to the estate. And that's not a fun conversation with your siblings or to whoever
else
is getting it.
And creditors will go after the beneficiaries if...
Well, sure. There's a legal process that they can go to the court system and say, "Well, we were due this," and so and now the estate is bankrupt, but it's been intentionally bankrupt. Sometimes it's not even intentional. You just think that you're doing a great thing by listing beneficiaries, and yet it could cause a lot of angst to the one who is required to close your estate. So in the settlement system, where what we have then is that we need to take inventories, we need to know what's in the home. I talked about using a camera or video or some other method of tracing exactly what's in the home before things start leaving the home, right? Valuating or getting valuations are part of this process so that we can have really good bookkeeping so that everybody knows exactly what's going on. And then there's some other things that we need to be aware of. So the other part that we need to be aware of are tax releases. There's always two different types of taxes that we need to be aware of when we're closing an estate. The first one is one that is really, really high and very few people are currently subject to it, which is the estate tax. And now there's two estate taxes when we live in Washington. The first one is the federal. That's at currently $11.2 million per person.
And so, that was changed recently, too.
Yeah, that was
it?
Changed at the beginning of this beginning of 2018. And so that dramatically was increased. Now, the thing about that law is that there's a sunset provision on that, which means that in 2025, that law sunsets, it ends, and it reverts back to whatever was in place before the law was signed. So this is not a permanent tax change. This is a temporary tax change. And the thing with taxes is that Congress is always putting their finger in the tax law. They're always passing new laws.
So don't count on any of that.
That's exactly correct. So
it used to be about 600,000, it seems to me.
Yes, back in the mid-90s, that's correct. It was very low. And so don't count on your congressperson being able to make up their mind on any level. So we will constantly have adjustments in taxes, but we need to be aware of that. So the federal tax is very high. Right now, I think it's 0.3 of 1% of estates are even subject to the federal estate tax. I think they ran numbers to where less than 600,000 Americans are currently subject to that tax. So the percentages have really, really been diluted when the estate tax really jumps. But we need to be aware of it. In addition, there's an estate tax in Washington state currently at a tick under $2.2 million. So anyone who passes away, if they have more than $2.2 million, they are going to be subject to an estate tax. That means $4.4 million for a married couple if the estate plan is done right. So if, like many couples, we just leave a very basic I love you will, which says, I just want to leave everything to my spouse, and you have $3 million, well, you just blew the tax planning, because you're leaving everything to your spouse. And now that spouse is worth $3 million because we didn't take advantage of it's called a tax exemption. The first $2.2 million is exempt from being taxed. Mm. So we didn't take advantage of that if indeed you just leave everything to your spouse. So we need to make sure that the proper planning is done at the inception of this whole thing, which is going back to the education and engage properly, so that we have the right documentation around a married couple. And right now, with property prices in the Pacific Northwest just going out the roof, and and the market has been doing well, except just recently, but that's okay. That goes up and down. But overall, you should be up over time. Just property alone now is anywhere from $500,000 to $800,000 just to get into a basic home nowadays, which is just mind-blowing. Mm. So the values of what we own continues to skyrocket. We need to make sure that the tax planning is done properly. So there's two estate taxes, federal and in Washington. We need to be aware of those. We need to plan properly. And when somebody dies, we need to make sure that the estate is ready to anticipate those. In addition, then, there's also income taxes. So if I die and now all of a sudden I haven't taken my required minimum distributions, they're called RMDs, out of my IRA on a given year, that was mine to take. So now what happens with that income? Who gets taxed on it? Does the estate? Do the beneficiaries? Does somebody else? So these are very, very complex questions. Yeah. These are very, very complex issues of where does the tax go when all of a sudden I made income, but I'm already dead. And so that's not a journey for the unwary. And so therefore, these are the things that we need to be aware of. In addition, if I've earned income this year, so specifically at the end of the year, when people are dying now at the end of the year, and by the way, more people die in these next 4 weeks between Thanksgiving and Christmas than any other time during the year. And so this is kind of the time when we need to be aware that when somebody dies, we need to make sure that all the income is traced. Mm-hmm. So we have now three different incomes. We have a federal estate, a Washington state estate. We have income tax before, after death, and we need to file a last tax return. So now we have four different tax things that we have to be tracing. Because if I made money this year, I need to file a tax return, and that information doesn't come to me until the end of January, if I'm lucky the end of January, and typically it's into the beginning of February before I get any of my tax issues sorted out. So now, have we held money over in the estate to prepare to pay this last tax? So there are many things that we need to sort out and be prepared to manage when somebody passes away. And so those are some of the things we need to be cognizant of, we need to be aware of, we need to have checklists for, and typically we need someone else to be watching over this, someone who has done it before. So I know that there's a lot of do-it-yourselfers out there. Boy, there's a lot of things I've mentioned in just this show alone that would make me kind of concerned if I'm about ready to take this up.
Yeah. Well, you have proven the maxim true. A couple of things that are true in life is not just death, but taxes.
Death and taxes.
Death,
yes,
and taxes,
that's right.
Are true.
Got to keep dealing with them.
And a very interesting subject this week, estate planning, life cycle. And if you're listening to Paul today and you can tell you need some help and you want to help your heirs, your beneficiaries, not to be so worried once you pass away, so important to have the proper documents in order, and a living trust is a great way to go. Or a will, but a living trust for sure. If people need help with this, how do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Yeah, go over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. We have podcasts. We have educational sessions coming up. You can contact us through that website as well, legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Thank you so much for listening. One of our core values at the Legacy and Faith Show is education, and education about proper estate planning. Well, we have more educational sessions coming up beginning in January. And on January 14th will be our first session of 2019. So you can join us whether in person or by live webinar on January 14th. beginning at 6 p.m. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and sign up for this new educational program coming up. So again, go to legacyandfaith.com and sign up for our January 14th session.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, learning a lot along with you this week from Paul Grant. He's just a veritable fount of information when it comes to the estate planning issues, life cycle of estate planning, and this week looking at the settlement system. Still more on this subject, Paul. We still got another point. I guess we're going to save that till next week's show.
Yeah, and I liked what kind of the statements that you were making as we closed out and went into break. So let me touch on those really quick. Is that this is why we need good planning, is because there is a system on the back end that we all have to walk through. So what I am talking about is irrelevant of a using a will or using a trust. And I agree with you. So if you've listened to this show at any amount of time, in my opinion, trusts are typically designed to ensure a smoother transition. Now, there's a lot of caveats to that statement, a lot of them. And one of the biggest is if you've stayed engaged with your plan and that you've actually kept it up, then it is an easier system to close. If your trust is, you know, 5, 10 plus years old, then chances are this system is not then it's really not going to be an easier system. Mm. We may have some of the tax issues aligned in there, but it may not be as an easier closing system. So what I want you to hear is that, yes, I'm trying to bring and highlight some things that we have to concentrate on and focus on when somebody dies, because everyone has to walk through this journey regardless of either of the systems. The question is the plan strong enough and has it been designed well so that it makes it smoother? So I agree with you, Mark. Yes, typically a trust is going to create that easier, smoother transition. And to a person, I am confident 100% of my clients, 100% of my clients say that creating a smooth transition when they die, to leave behind something that is smooth and as easily wrapped up as possible to whoever they're going to hand this thing off to, that is their primary goal, one of their highest values,
it's a gift.
It truly is. Yeah, that's right. And so so now we've talked about inventory. We've talked about you need to know the values. We've talked about tax releases. Now we enter into that we have to start making the actual transition. So if things were left by beneficiary designation, so that's where if you go to your bank and they say, if you die, who gets this account? So that's where you list beneficiaries. So a beneficiary designation, it could also be known as a TOD, transfer on death. So it's the same thing. What we're doing is we're naming somebody. So that's a probate runaround, and that means that that person gets whatever is in that account. So that renaming process will simply be a check written to the beneficiary. They will take that inheritance or whatever is left over, and they will deposit it into their own bank accounts, and we're done. Okay. So
that happens. That scenario happens. Bank account A goes to beneficiary A.
Yeah. And the beneficiary A walks in with a death certificate and says, I'm beneficiary A. Here's my stuff. And they go, okay, well, here's your check. And they close out the account. And that's why it bankrupts the estate, is because beneficiary A was legally entitled to that. And they created, remember, I'm using air quotes that you can't see, an easy process of beneficiary A getting the money, not really understanding that everything else has to, by law, be addressed. In addition, what if beneficiary A, I'm not going to spend much time on this, But what if beneficiary A now has a drug problem, is going through a divorce, is just reckless with money, has never had that amount of money in their lifetime, and all of a sudden is now going to think that a boat is a great investment, right? So what's the greatest day when for boat owners? Well, there's two of them, the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Right. So therefore, boats are not good investments. But beneficiaries think they are. So therefore, we need to make sure that the plan really thinks through everything that's in people's best interest, not just getting money to somebody else. So all of these things create how is the estate going to be closed. And it all starts at the planning process. The planning dictates the end result, or the lack of planning dictates the end result. So your lack of planning then creates exactly what you set up. Okay. And so what I have seen is that as much time, effort, and passion, and yes, money you put towards this part of your life, there is a direct correlation to what the end result is, of whether it's smooth and easy for your beneficiaries or whether it creates problems and messes that we really didn't think through and would have never wanted. So when somebody passes away, when somebody dies, then everything in their life kind of becomes irrevocable. So whether we use a trust or whether we use a will, that becomes fixed in time. And well, that makes sense because I can't get somebody's signature to make any more adjustments. We can no longer use their social security number. So if we may need to open up an estate account, or in the trusts I create, there's an administrative trust that we can open up. Those need to have an EIN. It's called an employer identification number. That replaces the social security number of one who has died.
I had to do that.
Yeah. And so what we're doing is we're saying, IRS, I can't use my social security number anymore because I'm dead. So I need a way, the IRS says, I need a way then to track everything that's going on. So because everything is about taxes. So therefore, we need to open up an EIN, and we need to then funnel all of the expenses and all of the income, any other checks that came in the decedent's name, life insurance policies. We need to have a way to collect these items, but I can't use the bank account of the one who died now. So that becomes typically frozen. And so it becomes stopped on the bank level. It's a self-protection issue on the banks. I don't agree with it, but that's just the way it is. They're going to stop everything because they don't want to be sued. So therefore, most bank accounts become frozen. They become locked. So we can't use that bank account anymore. We need to open up one that we can use, that we are legally empowered either by the will or by the trust. So we need an EIN. Now, most estates, statistically, wills will take anywhere from 6 to 18 months to close because we have hoops to jump through. Most trusts can be closed in 6 to 18 weeks. Mm. Now, I'm not saying that that's what happens.
Yeah,
I'm saying legally, if somebody wants their trust to be closed, it should offer a more clean system of the estate being closed. But there's a lot of issues in there. Everything has to be in the name of the trust. We can't have something in the name of the decedent anymore. So if everything was in the trust, if the trust was prepared properly, if the tax issues, we know how to resolve them quickly. But the thing about 6 to 18 weeks is that, boy, that's seeing me a lot. And most people in their grieving process do not want to see me that long. But just understand that there is an opportunity to push the system legally because we don't have to go through the courts, because we don't have to have any court oversight. Now, in Washington, there's called a non-intervention process, which means that I don't want the court to watch over me. We empower the personal representative in Washington state, maybe more than any other state in the union, to where we have a lot of flexibility, and it actually takes someone else coming to the court to sue the personal representative to engage the court's authority again. Otherwise, the personal representative is giving a lot of leeway to do what is required by law. So we assume in Washington law that they're going to act right. that they're going to do what is necessary with the closing process and with taxes. And in a trust, it's the same way. In a trust, it's a private document, and so we don't have to register it. We don't have to do something else that would make it a public affair. No, it's a family affair when we use a trust, and we can keep it that way. In a will, we need to open up a probate many times, and that becomes a public process. We need to show the beneficiaries their address. We need to give information about the one who died. All of these things are required by the law, and so it becomes a
for
public,
a will.
For a will, so that becomes a public process. So thank you for that clarification. Mm-hmm. In a trust, it's a private document. We don't have to disclose it to the courts or to anybody else except to beneficiaries. So they're entitled to things. So these are, this is a part of the transfer process. So only until the very end here, these past two shows, I hope give you some insight of the journey that every estate plan has to go through to be closed properly. And there's the operative word, closed properly. It doesn't matter if it's a will or a trust. We need to have a process in place. We need to have the right people in place to make sure that they're well protected and to make sure the beneficiaries and creditors are protected as well, because that's what's required. So that wraps up kind of our settlement system
discussion. That's up to number 7. We still have number 8 to do next time.
Yep.
Legacy fulfillment, surviving spouses, care and security, and also heir security. This will be an interesting discussion next time. Very informative few shows here. The Estate Planning Life Cycle, as taught by Paul Grant. You say you teach this, one of the many seminars you teach is on this exact subject.
Absolutely. Yep. Getting education is a very high value of mine. We want people to be informed. We want families to be ready. To be ready, if you have more information, you should be able to then manage through this wave of things much easier. Mm-hmm. So head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com, for podcasts, educational opportunities. We'd love to meet you and serve you.
Legacyandfaith.com. All of the shows are podcasted there. Another great edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.